Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Ted Amud Aleph. The Gemara here is discussing if there's a difference between the language that's used when freeing an Eved. For instance, if it's written in the Shtar, Atzmichav O Nichasai, or whether it says Kol Nichasai, does it make a difference? Abaye and Rava argue about this point. Abaye says that whatever happens in the shtar is achid, meaning that there's only one way to deal with the shtar. Either it's good or it's not good. And in conclusion, it's not good because he can't get the monetary aspect done. Therefore, he's also not freed by it. On the other hand, Rava says that the eved is freed by the shtar. On the other hand, he does not get the money that is adon left. Rav Adar Bat Matna suggests, Rava, it must be that your reasoning is pagin and dibura, that we bifurcate the din here, we bifurcate the document and say that we uphold a portion of the document and we do not uphold the other portion of the document. The portion that deals with his freedom, his being released, is similar to the Gitei Nashim, where if he says, Bifanai Nechtav, Bifanai Nechtam, he is believed and he gains his freedom through that. But that statement is not good enough in order to affirm the monetary aspects there, because that you need regular Kiyum Shtarot for. You have to affirm a Shtar. And Bifanai Nechtav, Bifanai Nechtam is not going to be sufficient. Bifanai Nechtav, Bifanai Nechtam is a takana for the Igun of Nashim, and we'll see for the Igun of Abadim as well. So it helps with respect to the freedom of this slave. It does not help with regards to the monetary aspects of the contract. So that was Rava's opinion. Rav Adar Bar Matna suggesting when an Eved brings a contract that we do this bifurcation between his freedom and the monetary gift, he says, is based on the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, who says, Paginan Dibura, that we bifurcate the din. Then they bring a proof from the Mishnah, the Tanan. And yesterday we explained the Mishnah according to Rashi. We said we would speak about it according to Tosafot today. Just explain what is going on in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, HaKotev kol nechasav la'avado, yatsa ben chorim. So that's straightforward. If he gives over all of his possessions to his Eved, the Eved goes free, because his Eved is one of the possessions. And therefore, he goes free, and he collects all that is written in the contract. On the other hand, shir karko koshuhu, he leaves anything out of the contract, lo yatsa ben chorin, then he does not go free. As Rashi notes over here, it's lav dafka karka, means anything that is left out, because if he left the shiur, we're going to say that he also left the eved out, or that he's just trying to patronize the eved and make him feel good that he would have gifted him all his property, but he never really intended to do any of this, just making him feel good. And therefore, lo yatsa ben chorin, he doesn't go out free. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon Omer, lo olam hu ben chorin. No, he does gain his freedom. Ad shemar kol nechasai netunim leploni avdi chutz miechad miribo shehem. So he says that he's definitely free, except in a case where he leaves out 1/10,000. So let's just deal with the case where Rabbi Shimon disagrees is when he says 1/10,000. Rashi says over here, because maybe he will deem the Eved to only be worth 1/10,000th, or whatever minimal amount he says that he leaves out, maybe he's referencing to his Eved. And because his Eved, he might say, my eyes is only worth this little amount. Most of the other Rishonim explain it, that it means a percentage. He leaves out a small percentage of the estate, and who knows where that percentage belongs, or even if it's across the board, that means he left a small portion of the Eved out. And an Eved doesn't go free unless you free 100% of the Eved. And that's what the failure is here. On the other hand, why does Rabbi Shimon believe that the statement of the Tanakhama does work and he gains his freedom? So Rashi claims that's because Midkama Rabbi Shimon Leolam, Rabbi Shimon says that it always works, so Ben Chorin Ashminan Loshna Hecha Dekana Shar Nechasimimo. Doesn't matter whether he acquired the remainder of the possessions. Doesn't matter if he does acquire the remainder of the possessions. Because over here, he doesn't mention what he left over. He says, Shishir, Karko Koshu, he leaves over some property. So now, in that case, Rashi says something that's very controversial, and all the Rishonim, almost across the board, disagree with Rashi, which is, Rashi says that if he leaves out some property, then he's not going to get anything. Any piece of property that the Eved comes to collect on, we're going to say to him, sorry, that's the piece that was left out of the contract. Sorry, that was the piece that's left out of the contract. And so the Eved will get no Nechasim now, and he will be awarded his freedom. So what Rashi says we prove from Rabbi Shimon is, the olam hu ben chorim. He's always a ben chorim. Whether he gets the nechasim, whether he doesn't get the nechasim, he is a free man. That shows you that Rabbi Shimon, in essence, is paginan dibura. that he says that he goes free, despite the fact that he will get none of the possessions over here. The problem with Rashi's explanation is that what Rashi states is not true halachically. If you have a contract which lives out a piece of property, you can't say to the person you get nothing because anything that you take might be that property that was left out. What happens is you give him all the property, and then it's called Yad Balashtar LaTachtona. He has the lower claim anytime somebody comes to challenge him. So if they come along to challenge him and say, listen, he left out a piece of property, that means that the party coming to make that claim on the property can take the best. He can take whatever he wants, the best of the property, because he says something was left out. And you can't prove to me it wasn't the best of the property. So that's what Tosafot says. I don't understand Rashi's position over here. He would get all the possessions, with the exception of that item. Could be the best of all the items, but it will be with that exception. And therefore, Rashi's explanation here, he says, does not match what would have been the halacha in this case. And therefore, Tosafot suggests that the reasoning here is different. Romari, Dololam Rabbi Shimon Bala Hosif. Afinu enu elo ota ir o ota sadeh. That's the chiddush over here. Rabbi Shimon comes along to say that if you say chutz mi karka koshu or chutz mi whatever the item is, and that's the only one of them that you have. So the individual says, you can have all my possessions. All of his possessions include the eved and includes this property. And he says, with the exception of that property. So now the Tanakhama says, well, once you've done that, you've basically annulled the gift. Because you said all my possessions, and then you said without, you took away basically what was all of your possessions. Because you took back the only other item that there is there besides the Eved. So for that reason, it's considered to be annulled, and there is no gift. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon says, even though this is the only other piece of property, we still say that the Dibor goes through just on his Eved. So despite the fact that he says, kol nechasai, and he's referencing all of his property, and then he says, except for all my property, basically, except for you, that still goes through. Even though the only thing remaining is the Eved. So even though the only thing remaining is the Eved, but because he said, kol nechasai, that allows him to go free, and that's how we prove Pagina and Dibura with regards to this Eved. So now, Rabbi Adar Bar Matno says, Rabbi Shimon must be the source for your principal Rova. Again, whether it's like Rashi, like Tosafot, how we prove that Rabbi Shimon holds a Pagin and Dibura by Kol Nechasai, Rava seems to be using the same logic. But he says to him, V'amar Rav Yosef Bar Minyume, Amar Rav Nachman. So the third line down on Tedem at Aleph, Rav Adar Mamanda challenges this concept and saying, Afo Pishikiles Rabbi Yosef et Rabbi Shimon, even though Rabbi Yosef praised Rabbi Shimon's explanation or understanding here in the Halacha, and you would think that if Rabbi Yossi praises Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yossi also holds like Rabbi Shimon, and he have a machloke between Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Meir, halacha ke Rabbi Yossi. So if Rabbi Yossi is upholding Rabbi Shimon's position, for sure, the halacha would be like Rabbi Shimon. Despite that fact, halacha ke Rabbi Meir. The halacha is like Rabbi Meir, that we do not say Pagina and Dibura. So Rabbi, if your whole principle is based on Rabbi Shimon, the halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon. Titania. When they told over this machloket between, seemingly it's Rabbi Meir now, and Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yossi, responding to Rabbi Shimon's logic, says, so here you have different interpretations. Sfatayim Yishak is the lips will kiss. Rashi says, Rabbi Shimon is deserving of a kiss. An accolade for what he said. What he said is really good. Mishiv Dvarim Nechokim. He's able to reconcile seemingly irreconcilable issues. Here that the Eved goes free and yet the possessions stay. The other hand, the Balei Tosafot say, Sfatayim Yishak means the person's lips are pursed or sealed, closed, because he can't be Meshiv. He can't answer. I mean, the logic or what he is saying is so good that the others are silenced by that. And so Yishak is not to kiss, but rather to be sealed or closed together because he's able to reconcile these differences or these seemingly opposing positions. If that's the case, the locha is like Rabbi Meir, not like Rabbi Shimon. Rova, who seemingly is subscribing to that position of Rabbi Shimon, why is he passing a locha like Rabbi Shimon if the locha is like Rabbi Meir? Where it says, Yumi Amar Rabbi Nachman Ochi. Did Rav Nachman really say this? V'amar Rav Yosef bar Minyumi, Amar Rav Nachman. So again, the same Kamoraim here. It's Rav Yosef bar Minyumi, Amar Rav Nachman. So the Gemara wants to know, did Rav Nachman really say the halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon, rather like Rabbi Meir? But Shchiv Meira, Shekatav Kol Nechasav LaAbdo. A person who is on their deathbed, and then he gives all of his possessions to his Eved, Vamat, Chuzer B'Nechasim, Veino Chuzer B'Eved. He can back out of the gift of property, he can't back out of the gift of the Eved. Chuzer B'Nechasim, he can back out of the gift of the Nechasim, but not Shchiv Meira Hu. It's a gift of a Shchiv Meira. But he can't back out of the Eved because the Eved has already attained a shame of a free person. A matnat shchiv meira is that a person on their deathbed, the Chachamim empowered them through verbal instructions to gift items to people. The problem being that technically the way that you have to gift is through contracting. And you have to contract and he has to sign on the contract. This person is teetering between life and death. And in order to leave him with peace of mind, the Chachamim instituted that a Shchiv Meira can make tzibuyim, he can give a last will and testament orally, and it will be binding. But what happens if, for whatever reason, he survives? He does not pass away from this. So, embedded in the gift of a Shchiv Meira is obviously the assumption that he's going to pass away. We'll get to this more in detail later on in the Masechta and Baba Batra especially. The Shchiv Meira, as long as he gives away all of his property, the assumption is that he thought he was going to die. If he doesn't die, then it's as if there's a built-in t'nai that all the gifts go back. Now then, if you leave something out, then it indicates that he had some suspicion he might survive, because otherwise why did he leave out that property from the gifting or his last will and testament? And then it won't go back. But that matnat mishchiv meira is premised on this t'nai. So over here, on his deathbed, he gives all of his possessions to his Eved. That means including the Eved's freedom, because he's getting all of the possessions. So then when he walks away from this, he gets up from this illness, it's automatically reversed everything he did. So as far as the kinyanim, or the gifts that were done on monetary matters, all of that comes back. As far as the Eved is concerned, he can't pull back on that, because he was already freed. It says he was already freed, once somebody gains the shame of a free man, you can't pull that back. The question is, and Tosfot asks it over here, okay, that's a really nice idea, but in the end, the person is the gifter. And if he's the gifter, he never intended to give him his freedom if he survived. And so then how can you say that he is freed? Tosfot over here says the Eved can only be freed while he's still alive. Once he's dead, they can't give a get shichrur. So the get shichrur can only be effective while the owner is still alive, and therefore he must have granted him his freedom while he was still alive, because otherwise it wouldn't be effective. Tosfot solves that problem either by saying that he said mehayom, from today, or he meant to free him before he's dead, because otherwise what he's saying is meaningless. So that's how he gets him freed before he's dead. The second problem, which is the problem that we raised, even if you say that's how it's working, why does it happen? There's a built-in condition in a matnat shchiv meira that he only intends for this to happen if he passes away. He does not intend for this to happen if he walks away from it. So how can you free a slave when the Baal never intended to free the slave in this situation? So Tosfot here brings up a concept that we see by Kiddushin. When everybody gets married, they say, Ariat Mikudesh Ali, Kedat Moshe V'Yisrael, which basically says that the way the Chachamim said. And he says the same thing over here. Shchiv Meira or Matnat Shchiv Meira is a Takanat Chachamim. Technically, none of this should work because it's all oral giving. There is no Kinyanim that are taking place over here. If that's the case, what Tosfot says is that Alastam, an individual who effectuates the Takanat Chachamim of Shchiv Meira, the Mistama, Dato, Kamo, Shiyamru Lo Chachamim. He has in mind that whatever the Chachamim say, that's what will work. And therefore, since the Chachamim say over here, he went free, so that's what it is. He's using a Takanat Chachamim. It's binding in all of its scope. And the Chachamim say over here that if Eved was given freedom, he cannot renege on that freedom. Whereas, Tosfot says, Im Kata Behedja, Mehayom Im Yamut, Mehayom Im Lo Yamut, if he writes in the contract or in the Shchiv Meira, he makes it clear that it's if I die, then you are freed from today. If I don't die, you are not freed from today. Because there he specifically overrides what had been the stam situation of the Chachamim. Over there, Tosfot says, and he doesn't think the fact that he was freed at any time will help him. So Tosfot concedes that if the individual makes it clear that he's only freeing him if he dies, then the Eved will not go free if he doesn't die. On the other hand, if he just frees him, and the assumption is that it's based on this matnat shchemira because the circumstantial evidence or the context makes it clear that that's what's happening, then he's governed by the takanat chachamim, and if the eved was let free for a moment, then he doesn't come back even if he survives this illness. Here you see again the concept about palgin and dibura, and that Rav Nachman over here says that you are palgin and dibura. So how can you say before the halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon? Because over here, Rav Nachman makes it clear we are palgin and dibura, because over here, the eved gains his freedom, but the nechasim go back. So he is palgin and dibura. So if that's the case, how can you say before that Rav Nachman says, hey, you know what? Even though Rabbi Yossi praised Rabbi Shimon, the halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon. Well, if Rabbi Shimon holds a palgin and dibura, then why isn't the halacha like Rabbi Shimon a palgin and dibura if Rav Nachman in another case says palgin and dibura? It must be that Rabbi Shimon's reasoning is different. Elam Rav Ashi, Oto Mainu Taima, the reasoning of Rabbi Shimon is, Mishum Talav, Krut Gita Hu. There is no severing of the relationship. What Rashi says over here is, Keva Dikla Meimar, Deshayre, Daha Nachat Deshiura. Once he already is leaving something over, then you have to question whether there is something else left over. V'hulo Skar B'tocha Matana. The Eved is not explicitly mentioned in the gift, and he's leaving something over. And therefore, it's a lav kritut gamur. Since he didn't write atzmecha unichasa, he didn't separate between the Eved and nechasim. And when he leaves something over within the nechasim, we have no idea what he's leaving over. And since there's some residual, you could think that maybe there's a residual in the Eved as well. Rashi claims over here, just because he left something over, maybe we don't know what he left over. Tosafot, or other Rishonim say that the problem here is because he said, kol nechasai, and then he took something out of it. So there's already some sort of question about what he really meant when he said, kol nechasai. In some senses, he's reversed the statement of kol nechasai. By reversing the statement of kol nechasai, that means that maybe not kol eved either. And it's very hard to know now whether he really meant the eved or the full eved was included in that emancipation. And an eved, if there's something left out of his freedom, it doesn't go free because there's gzeir shava between get shichrur and get gerushin, bill of divorce and eved. And by bill of divorce, it says it has to be a sefer kritut. It has to be a full severing of the relationship between the husband and wife. So to over here, the only way that an eved goes free is there's a full severing of the relationship. And therefore, the reason it doesn't work, according to Rav Nachman, even though we hold a palgin and dibura, is because that shiur is a problem. And so therefore, you're going to have three different dinim. In Rava's din, by Rava's din, where he brings the get and says, kol nechasai, even though the nechasim don't go, he is mishukhrar, because there's no shiur there. His severing of the relationship is completely severed. Palgin and dibura, like we saw Rav Nachman says, therefore the eved goes free. In the case here of shchemera, we will also say palgin and dibura, and even though he can reverse the gift of the nechasim, he does not reverse the gift of the freedom of the eved, his emancipation, because he already got a shame ben chorim. And a shame ben chorim cannot be reversed. In the case where he says, all of my possessions, with the exception of some karka, exception of karka koshu or any item, in that case, he will not win his freedom. Not because we don't say palgin and dibur. We would say palgin and dibur. The problem is, even if you affect palgin and dibur, we're not sure what he left over. And since there might be something left over, we don't have a full severing of the relationship. Since we don't have a full severing of the relationship, he does not go free. And that would be the explanation of the three different cases according to this, and why Rava says this. Right now, the Gemara goes back to the last line in our Mishnah, which is, Emiyesh alav urim itkayem bechotamav. If there are questioners or people casting aspersions on the get, then you verify it or you validate it through its signatories. Arar kama. How many people here are questioning the validity of the get? Ileimar arar chad. If you tell me it's one person coming and questioning the validity of the get, v'amarab yochanan debiakol ein arar pachot mi shnayim. There is no such thing as questioning the validity of a document unless you are two edim. One ed is not sufficient. Vel arar trei. So now, you tell me that there are two edim coming and questioning the validity of the get. Treu trei ninu. Then you have the two signatories of the get. You have the two edim saying now there's a problem. Then my chazit is samchat ahani, samuchani. Why are you relying on the edim that are signed on the get? Rely on the other edim. And it will be problematic. Remember, the woman here was married. So her chazaka is of an eshet ish. You're trying to change your status from eshet ish to ois eshet ish to being divorced. You can only do that if you have evidence. If there's a stalemate, or if there's a tie in any way, then she remains in her current status. Her current status is an eshet ish. So over here, if we come to a stalemate with regards to whether this get is valid or not, then she stays married, or she stays as an eshet ish, or at least a safek eshet ish, and she won't be able to get married. Ella ar debal. The questioner here is the husband. So as opposed to one aide who doesn't normally have power here, the Baal has power because he is a Baal Dovar. He's the one who supposedly gave the get. And if the Baal comes along and says, I never gave the get, or I never sent the shliach with the get, then that's a serious question about the validity of the get. Itkayem b'chotamav. If the signatories are upheld, then the Baal can't make that claim. But if we can't uphold the signatories, the Baal, who is the one who supposedly gave the get, can cast dispersions on the get itself. And that is what the Mishnah says, that the validation of the signatories will overcome the aspersions cast on the get by the Baal, because he has more power than a normal Eid Echad. On the other hand, if the signatories are upheld, then the document is considered to be valid, and if it's a valid document, the Baal then can't undermine a document unless then he brings a deem to undermine or to override the other two Eidim. Tosfa points out that the Baal is not the only one who can cast aspersions on the get, but Hu Adin Ar de Lekuchot. Also, buyers of property from the husband can also question the validity of the get, because their property is going to be taken away by this get. If she has now a claim for her ketubah, and now that she can go back now and take their property based on this get, they can question the validity of the get. And so, just like the husband can question it, so too can the buyers of property from the husband question it when she comes to collect from them. So, obviously they focused on the Baal because he's the most powerful and gets to the core issue, whether she's divorced or not. The Kuchot don't question the ability of her to be divorced. They're just questioning her ability to make the monetary collection based on it. So even if they question the validity of the get, she might still, as far as our status can be concerned, be divorced. Just, she can't get the money from them. Then if the Baal comes and questions it, that questions the core issue, which is the divorce itself. So that's why our Gemara used the example of the Baal. But as Tosfa notes, the Yerushalmi says it could be the Lekuchot as well that question the validity of the get. And then if you validate it through its signatories, either we have the people who signed it, or we have people who recognize the signatures of the signatories, that will overcome the questions of either the Baal or of the Lekuchot. If the Shliach came and said, B'fanei nechtam, b'fanei nechtam, according to Tosafot, he is Neman Kishnaim. And if the Baal comes to be Ma'ar'er, he can only cause laws on the get, but he cannot change the fact that it's a kosher get. Rashi, on the other hand, says that it's Chad B'Chad, it's Chad Neged Chad, and he can be posel the get, the Baal in this case. So Mochoket Rashi and Tosafot, as to the power of the Baal, when the only validation came through, B'fanai Nechtav, B'fanai Nechtam. Over here, the validation is coming through the upholding of the Edim on the get. That's a full-fledged validation of the get. It's equivalent of real to Edim, and then the Baal does not have a right to invalidate the get unless he brings Edim to counter the Edim that are signed on the get. Whether it's the Edim themselves that are testifying or somebody testifying to their signatures, either way, that is the power of two Edim, and the only way that they can be offset is with another set of two Edim, not the questioning of the Baal or the Lekuchot. All right, next Mishnah. Mevi get mibedinat hayam ve'eino yachol lomar b'fanai nechtav u'fanai nechtam. We saw this back on Daf Dalet. It's an individual brings the get, gives it, but then can't articulate, can't say, b'fanai nechtav, b'fanai nechtam. That'll be the first question in the Gemara. What exactly is this case? How did that happen? If it has signatories to the get, itkayem b'chotamav. Then you check the signatures, or you validate the signatures. Im yesh alav edim is interesting. What do you mean if it has edim? Don't all gitim have edim on it? So either you say here that it is Shitat Rabbi Elazar, that Eide Misira Karte. And since Eide Misira Karte, there is a possibility that the get was made valid despite the fact that there are no signatories on it. Or you say that it's not referencing the get itself, but rather the document of Shlichut. And that the document of Shlichut, Im Yeshal Avedim, then you can Kayim Bechotamav. That's the two possibilities I had to read, Im Yeshal Avedim. Echad Gitei Nashim, Vechad Shichrurei Avedim. So here the Mishnah brings the equation between bills of divorce and a document of emancipation, that they are shavu, the molich or the mevi. Whether taking them or bringing them back, we equate them. This is one of the ways in which the bill of divorce is similar to a document of emancipation. As Tosfos points out here, this statement in the Mishnah is backwards. Because the way the Gzeira Shava works is la. There's the word la that appears here by Gitin, appears by Abadim, and we say that Gzeira Shava teaches us all the dinim that apply to a bill of divorce apply to a document of emancipation. So the equation is really, this is one of the ways that Shichurei Abadim is similar to Gitei Nashim. The way that the Mishnah phrases it or frames it is backwards. It's either because we're in Masechet Gitim, and so the focus of all the Mishnah is on Gitim, so the Mishnah is saying, well, get, this is one of the ways that Gitei Nashim is equal to Shichurei Abadim, because the main focus is Gitei Nashim. That's one way to express it. Or Tosafot says, so since they were talking about Gitin until now, it puts Gitin first. It's just a technical reason, which is that literarily, we've been speaking about Gitin, so it put Gitin first. But truthfully, the equation is the opposite way, which is that Shechurei Abadim is learnt from Gitei Nashim, not Gitei Nashim from Shechurei Abadim. So now, Mayenu Chol Yomar, again, this is the Gemara that we saw in Daf Dalet, Daf Hey. What does it mean that he can't say it? Ilei Mecheresh, if he is a Cheresh, Cheresh baratuya gito? Then how did he get there? A cheresh is someone who is considered to be a lav bardat. It's lav bardat, he can't be made into a shliach to bring a get. Vatzanan. Kok shirim laviat a get, chutz, mi cheresh shotev katan. So again, a Mishnah that we're going to see later on, that anybody can bring a get, with the exception of a cheresh shotev katan, because all of them are deemed to be lav bardat. That they don't have the mental capacity to be appointed as agents in order to carry out their agency. Shotei and Katan, obviously, Cheresh, again, every time we speak about this, it's because in their day, a Cheresh, who was deaf-mute, was deemed to be a lav bardat. And again, today, the modern poskim tell us that it's different if we can clearly understand that they are b'nei deya, that they do have a status of bardat. Amar Rav Yosef, halcha b'yiskina, and what's the case here? Kakon, shet nitanola, kishu pikeach, he gave it to her while he was of sound mind. And then he lost the ability to speak at that moment. So when he brought the get, when he was acting as an agent, he had full mental capacities, and he brought it as a good shaliach. Right after he hands it to her, he loses his mind, whatever happens there, and he's unable now to speak and unable to say, b'fanai nichtav u'b'fanai nechtam. So that's the case in the Mishnah. That's why we're going to the validation of the signatories, because he can't say, b'fanai nichtav v'nechtam. Many ask, including the Balei Tosafot, before ask, why don't you just say that he was an Elaim? Instead of saying that he's a Cheresh, where Stam Cheresh in the Gemara is, he's Lav Bardat, just say that he's Elaim, that he's mute, that he's unable to speak, but he can hear. So then he would be a Bardat, and he could bring the get, but then he couldn't say, b'fanai nechtav v'nechtam. That's the easiest solution to the problem. So the answer there are twofold. One is that that would not be a problem because here we do not need oral testimony. He could write down, b'fanai nechtav u'b'fanai nechtam, and that would solve the problem. That's why they didn't use an Elaim, but rather someone nitcharesh who loses his status completely and cannot then write down or do anything at that point. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that an Elaim is pasumi kara, that he can't be an agent up front, because the fact that he cannot say b'fanai nechtav b'fanai nechtam ruins the agency, because that's a necessary part of the agency in this case. And so if up front he can't speak, then he can't be an agent. On the other hand, the cheresh that happened at the last moment, when he took the get, he was able to say b'fanai nechtav b'fanai nechtam. That problem only arose much later on, so that doesn't ruin his agency. So it's a fundamental machloket as to whether Elaim can bring the get or not. According to some of the Rishonim, the Elaim can't bring the get because he can't say b'fanai nechtav v'nechtam from the beginning. Others say he could bring the get, but you don't need to validate it with the signatories because he could testify through writing, and that would solve your problem. So the fundamental machloket is whether an Elaim is okay, and number two is whether an Elaim here can testify by writing. Because even though generally you can't testify through writing, this whole institution is an institution that is extra beitin or extra edut, which is, it's outside the normal rules. Aid me pi aid, isha, all these things are allowed here because we want to protect against agunot. So if we made for writing, also would work in this case. Echad gitei nashim, v'echad shechurei abadim. Tarabanan, Shlosha Drachim Shavu Gitei Nashim Lishukhurei Avadim. There are three ways in which bills of divorce are equated to documents of emancipation. Shavu, what are they equal for? L'molich u'lemevi, our case in the Mishnah, which is that when they're brought from overseas or taken overseas, that if you say b'fanai nechtav v'nechtam, that works. B'chol get she'esh alav eid kuti pasul, chutz migitei nashim shechurei avadim. Any get that has one of the signatories is an eid kuti, then the get, the document, the contract is pasul, with the exception of gitei nashim and shechurei avadim. The exception of a bill of divorce or a document of emancipation. B'chol ashtarot ha'olim be'erkaot shel ovdei kochavim. And any document that went through the secular court system, even though the signatories to the document are non-Jews, ksherim, it's a full-fledged, enforceable document, contract, chutz, with the exception of gitei nashim v'shichurei abadim, the exception of the bill of divorce and the document of emancipation. Now, as far as an eid kuti is concerned, we worry about the eid kuti over here, which the Gemara will explain later on, but that eid kuti, when it comes to gitei nashim shechurei avadim, is somewhat different, because when you sign a get shechurur, you sign a get piturin, in those cases, both eidim have to be present, and you need to know the other eid. So when you sign the document, you're going to be certain about who the other eid is. On the other hand, in other contracts, you can have it that one aid signs and another aid signs separately. They don't have to sign together. And then the problem there is that the individual may not know the other aid or the aid kuti. He has no idea whether the guy signed, who signed after him, whether it was validated. So that way, the aid kuti, we have question marks about because we just don't know whether he is an appropriate aid here and whether he is able to be used in this case. On the other hand, when talking about get shechur or get piturin, in those cases, both eidim are present, and the one who signs has to know who the other party is that signed, and if he signs after him or before him, there's protocol about how you sign, but they will have knowledge about the signatures, and that's what makes it okay by the gitei nashim and the shechurei avadim. Right now, with regards to going to non-Jewish courts with contracts, Rashi brings up the reason that the Gemara says later, which is dina de machuta dina. It's simply that the law of the land is the law. And so if you have a contract under the law of the land, then the contract is binding. And so if it went through the secular court system and was validated in the secular court system or signed in the secular court system, it is upheld. Basically, what many say is that the problem that we have with the non-Jewish signatories to the contract is we're afraid that they were lying or we're afraid that they were not necessarily believable edim. On the other hand, once it's validated in the secular court, that overcomes that problem. Because the courts have a certain amount of prestige and authority that they want to maintain, and therefore they can only validate documents if the documents are real. Their checking of the signatures and the fact that they signed in the secular court gives us a certain amount of nemanut to the edim. That seemingly is what's happening here. And then, lay on top of that, dina de machuta dina, so you overcome the whole problem. And El Hanami, that the non-Jewish signatures would have been fine. But we have a problem, which is we don't know if they're believable. They don't have nemanut. So we overcome the nemanut problem because it was done in the court. That's the way Rashi says it. Tosafot over here says, this whole validity of the contract in this case is a takana de rabbanan. Basically, a takana de rabbanan to allow for business transactions to take place or for creditors to collect, debtors to get loans, to open up the market and keep it a liquid market, you have to allow for these documents that go through the secular court system to be enforceable. Because if they're not enforceable, it's going to be very hard sometimes for a creditor to collect. It's going to be very hard sometimes for a debtor to get a loan. Because the only way that he can get a document is a document through the secular courts or signed by non-Jewish edim. So if we say all of those are invalid, then you're going to basically shut down a huge part of the market, plus take out liquidity from the market. So Tosafot claims that it is a takanat derabanan, and that's what he says here. But Kevin delav bnei edut ninu. These non-Jewish edim are not bnei edut. Hariyu afilu kol shtarot olim berakot shel dechamim lefsol min haTorah. Min haTorah, all these contracts should be pasul. Afilu otam omdim l'raya. Even if they're only documents of evidence, they're not the actual kinyan. They're simply documents that evidence the fact that there was a proper kinyan over here. In this case, he thinks they should be pasul. All of the documents should be pasul min haTorah. Ella, Takanta de Rabbananu, Hecha de Kimlan, Bisaudaitu Shu'emet. But we have a din de Rabbanan, a takanta de Rabbanan, says that when we know they're telling the truth, Dolomari Nafshayu, because they're not going to risk ruining their reputation. Therefore, the document is upheld midin de Rabbanan, because of, again, all the reasons that would surround why you'd want these documents to be valid, but not because midoraita the edim are good, or that it is good midoraita. He says, mikol makom, shtar matana is nothing. Because even if you know they're telling the truth, you don't have a shtar. Because shtar matana, that is the form of kinyan to give the gift. When you're talking about other shtarot, they're just evidence of a transaction that took place. So when you have evidence of a transaction that place, we'll say that the document is a valid document, even though they're non-Jewish signatories, so that's the Takanah de Rabbanan. On the other hand, the Takanah de Rabbanan did not allow that would generate the kinyan, or that would generate the shtar, a matanah, a gift. When you put it into a document, that is the big vehicle for giving the matanah. And therefore, even if you know that the edim that are signed it are telling the truth, but if they're non-Jewish edim, they don't have a status of edut. If they don't have a status of edut, then they cannot validate or create a shtar matana, which is the vehicle of kinyan, because they're not bnei edut. On the other hand, according to Rashi, that may not be the case, because Rashi seemingly thinks that they are bnei edut. We just have a question as to their honesty in these cases. And since they went through the court system, their honesty is being upheld. And that's why it works of dina de machulta dina. It's possible that Rashi would disagree with this point, even though, again, Gemara later on is going to say that it's a chasp of alma. It's no good, the shtar matana. We have to think about why it's no good. According to Tosfot, it's no good because edut of the Ovdei Chachamim doesn't work at all. According to Rashi, even though we say dina de machulta dina, that has to do with transactional items. It doesn't have to do with gifting, which is not a transactional item. And over there, maybe we do not use or invoke this dina de machulta dina. Now, the exception to that, of course, is gitei nashim shechrei avadim. But gitei nashim, because they are lav bnei kritut, they're not shayach in the world of divorce and marriage. And only people who are shayach to the world of divorce and marriage can sign on a get, or can be a party or witnesses to the get. Tosafot adds other issues, including problem that the edim of Deku Kahbim will not have the lishma, or cannot have lishma, as well as they cannot exercise shlichut. So all these failings make them ineligible as edim on a bill of divorce. And the same thing is true by the Shichru Abadim, because there is a Gzer Shava to Gitei Nashim. And Rashi makes an interesting point over here. He says, but with regards to contracts, Aval Dinim Nitztavu B'nei Noach. When it comes to contracts, one of the Shiva B'nei Noach is Dinim. And so when it comes to contracts, Enoch and Avi, that these non-Jewish Edim are good Edim, because they are relevant in that world or within that halachic realm. So that's why I said before that Rashi seemingly over here says that these edim are kshirim. Tosafot says they are psugim, but there's a takanat chachamim. Rashi seems to think that they are kshirim mi doraita. We just need to validate to verify that they're telling the truth, but otherwise they are good signatories to the contract. All right. So now ukadivrei Rabbi Meir ba'arba'a, and Rabbi Meir says that there's also a fourth thing that compares them. Haomer ten get zel ishti ushtar shechru zel abdi. So a person who says, give this get to my wife, or give this document of emancipation to my slave, but salach zor bishnehem yachzor. If he wants to renege on either of those, he can. Divrei Rabbi Meir. So here Rabbi Meir, you see, equates between the two, which is that you can renege on that which you've said. Why is it that Rabbi Meir believes that in all these cases you can go back, versus the Chamim that disagree with that? And that is because it depends on whether you think it's a merit or a deficit to either be freed being a slave or to get a divorce for a woman. If it's beneficial, then when another third party takes possession of the item for you, it's irreversible, because zochin shel adam shelo bifanav. You're allowed to benefit someone else, even though they're not a party to it. If you accept a gift on their behalf, then they acquire it, because of course you can do something good for someone else. On the other hand, in chavim shelo bifanav. You cannot obligate, or you cannot do something that is detrimental to a party without their acquiescence or without their receiving of the document. And so over here, if you hand over the document to a shliach, the action or activity is not completed until it reaches the end party, because it's considered to be a chuvah. So as Rashi notes over here, Rabbi Meir believes that a divorce and document emancipation are both negative for the receiving parties. We'll discuss this more later on. Given that the documents are not effective immediately when you give it over to the shliach, but only effective once they reach the party, either the woman or the eved in that case. And so since they have yet to reach them, you can reverse it. And that's what Rabbi Meir says. So that's Rabbi Meir's opinion. On the other hand, the Chachamim who disagree with them say that with regards to Shechrur, you can't go back out of it because Shechrur, freeing a slave, is a zchut. That is a positive thing. And so once you get into the Shliach, it's as if he was Zocha on behalf of the Eved and you can't reverse it. On the other hand, the Gitei Nashim is something negative and therefore you could back out of it. So therefore the Chachamim believe that there's not the same din by Shechrur Abadim as there is by Gitei Nashim, and that's why they do not count it as amongst those numbers. Rabbi Meir thinks that they are both negative for the receiving party, says they are equated over here because you can back out of both of them. Gemara says, Bishlam Rabbonon. The Rabbonon over here, Minyono, they say that there are three items, Le'me'utei to Rabbi Meir, because they don't agree with Rabbi Meir. They don't think that Rabbi Meir's equation over there is correct. Elo the Rabbi Meir, Minyono, Le'me'utei Mai. According to Rabbi Meir, when you say there are four items that they're equated for, four and not five. What's the not five? Le'me'utei Mai. What does that come to exclude? The Muteha comes to exclude this case, the Tanya. Edim shen yodim lachtom, edim that don't know how to sign, mikarim lahem niyar chalak, you tear out for them clear or clear parchment, umemalim et akreim duyo, then you fill it with ink. Here it's Machloket Rashi and the Tosafot, and probably the remainder of the Rishonim, which is Rashi says, what they do is, they take the document, and they carve into the document the letters. And then these individuals don't know how to write, they fill those carvings with ink, and that becomes their signature of the document. Sirtut, and then you fill with ink. That's Tosafot's criticism of Rashi. It doesn't say Sirtut. That's what it should have said. So rather, Tosafot brings the Shita of the Rabbeinu Hananel that we're talking about a stencil. That they create a stencil from another piece of parchment, they cut out the letters, they put it on top of the get, and then the Edim fill in the ink on the stencil, and that's how they sign the document below. Gemara will say later on that they leave them more space than they need, because otherwise you're doing the signature for them, meaning that they're not actually signing. How is it their signature? You have to basically make the stencil a little bigger than it needs to be, and then they fill it in and don't fill the whole thing with ink, so that way they're actually doing something, that they're actually making a signature over here. So then, if they don't know how to write, that's how we help them to write or sign the document. That's true with regards to a bill of divorce. When it regards to a document of emancipation or any other contract, if they know how to read and sign, they do that. If not, then they don't sign on it. Meaning that this is a kula for Gitei Nashim that you can sign in this manner. Kriya Mandakar Shmei. What is Rabbi Shimon Gold saying about here that you read it to them? That was never mentioned in the Braita beforehand. Why does Rabbi Shimon Gold also talk about you read it to them and then they sign it? So Chasurei Mechsera. The Braita is missing some words here. Achintani. Edim Shein Yodim Likrot. If the Edim do not know how to read, Korim Lifnehem. Then you read it to them. Vichotmim. And then they sign it. Shein Yodim Lachtom. And if they don't know how to sign, Mikarim them. Then we do it. We either go into Rashi, we do the etching. According to Tosafot, we create a stencil in order to allow them to sign. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here is, according to Rabbi Meir does not hold like the Tana Kama, who says that you can use this in any place. I mean, you can use this for a get nashim, as well as a shechrur abadim. You can only use it by gitin, like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, because there's a kulot that are put in place for gitin nashim because of agunot. And so this is only a kula there, and it's not a place where we equate between Gitei Nashim and Shechrurei Avadim. So Rav Meir says there are four places where they are similar, and the exception is this case where they are not considered to be similar. He holds like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and not like the Tana Kama. On the other hand, the Chachamim say there are three cases or three instances because they disagree with Rabbi Meir, and say that there are only three and not four instances. The suggestion in that Mishnah is that when you have a problem by get nashim, if they are illiterate, you can read the get to them. And if they are unable to write, then you can help them out with a stencil or some sort of etching in the get. Tosfot over here asks, how can you read the get to them and then have them sign it? Velo havi aid mi pi aid. Why isn't that considered to be hearsay? You're not signing to the get that's there. You're signing to what you're hearing from someone reading the get. She'ein tzrichim le'id al ikar ha'maseh. What Tosfot says over here is that the testimony here is not about what action or activity took place. The signatories on the get are simply signed to the fact that that information is written in the get. And so therefore, if someone reads it to them, that's not called hearsay anymore, because that is exactly the information that they need. And so once they have that information, they can sign on it, and it's not considered to be aid mi pi aid. Tosfot then says, but because that's the case, you need shnayim korin. You need a yachid k'Rav Nachman, b'safrei d'dayne, d'itbahu imta. You have to know that the person who's reading the document is telling the truth. So either you have to have two edim, so because two edim in general have nemanot, and therefore if they read it to you, two edim, then it's fine to sign it, even though you didn't read it inside. Or you have to have someone who has some position of power, or is in a situation whereby if they lie about what's in the document, it would compromise their stature, standing, or position. Then if they read it to you, you can believe them because they have nemanut. So Tosfot points out here that in order to read the get nashim to someone, have them sign it, you need these qualifications. Number one, it has to either be two edim or someone with nemanut because of emta, because of the fear. And number two is it's not considered to be aid mi pi aid because they're not signing on the kor maaseh, but they're signing rather on what's found in the document. And now they have that information that they can sign on. So Gemara says here, v'tuleka, there are no more equations between Gitei Nashim and Shechrei Abadim. You're telling me there are only three according to the Chamim, four according to Rabbi Meir. There are no other things where they have the same din. Vayika, Homer, it's nu get zeh li'ishti, ushtar shechru zeh l'abdi, umeit. He says, give this divorce to my wife, or give this document of emancipation to my eved, umeit. And then he dies, lo yitnu l'achar mita. Can't give it after the death of the Baal. This is a very difficult question as to why you can't give it after the death of the Baal. Rashi says, Avila Rabbanon, even going to Rabbanon that says, Shechrei Abadim is a zchut, because remember before we saw the machlok between the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir as to whether it's a good thing or a bad thing when you give over these documents, even according to the Chachamim who say that giving it to Abadim is a zchut, and Zachin Shadam Shalom B'fanav, then it should be done. When he gives over to the Sheikh, it should be done. It shouldn't matter that he dies after that fact. Nevertheless, it's enough of a zchut that he can't back out of it. But they agree that if it doesn't reach the hand of the party, it doesn't work. Tosafot says, we never heard of such a thing. Where did Rashi get this from? It says, V'davar tema perusho. His explanation is inexplicable. Because that's the whole concept. The whole concept that Zachin Shalom B'fanav is that you make the kinyan on behalf of the party. You become an agent for the party. Because we're Anan Sadeh, that the party wants this. This is a benefit to him. And of course they'd want you to accept it on their behalf. If that's true, then when they accept it, then it's a full acceptance. And it's done deal. Not only can you not back out of it, but it's done. So then why should the death of the sender terminate the agency? Over here, the agency's done. And it should be a good get. He also mentions, by the way, that Rashi Chazar Bo, Daf on Daf Yud Gimel, he says Rashi backs away from this explanation. Shapir Zamishnazu, Da Omer Tznu Garsinan, Velo Garsinan Ten Getze. Tosafot says over here, Ten Getze means he already handed it over to the Shliach, and therefore it's Zoche Jalob Fanav, and it should be done. Whereas over here it says Tznu means a future statement. Give this to my wife, which means that he has yet to give the document over to the Shliach. And that's why Tosafot says over here, the death terminates it, because the Shlichu was never done. The agency never began. Because he never handed the document over to the person who is going to be the agent and then will act as an agent for the receiving party because Zachin Shalom B'fanav, because over here, it never got to the Shliach's hands. That's the difference in the language. Omer Tznu and not Tain. So Tznu means that he's instructing them to give it to the Shliach, to give it to that individual. Since it's one step back, it never reached the hands of the Shliach. Because if you add the Girsa of Tain, Getzeh, means that he's speaking to the Shliach and handing the get to them, then already it would be done as soon as he hands it over. And that's how Tosfot deals with it. But there are other Rishonim, including the Rif, the Rambam, and others that agree with Rashi, that even though you've given it over, you still, even though you can't back out of it, it's not a done deal until it reaches the individual. And what you have to suggest, or what you have to say is, that when he gives it over to the Shliach, he basically is saying to them, that it's only effective when it reaches the individual themselves. And there's some sort of built-in understanding that even though they're strong enough to accept it and to block a reversal of this, he still delays the effectiveness of the get or the effectiveness of the freeing of the slaves until it reaches the destination party. And that's why if he dies in between, it's not considered to be a valid document. So the Gemara says, why isn't this comparison included in the list? On the other hand, if he says, give this money to someone else, umate, and he dies, you can still give it after his death. So you see here that these are dinim that are specific to a bill of divorce and a document of emancipation that are not true by other contracts. By other contracts, once he says to give it, you give it even after mitah because it's a matnat shchem meira. And matnat shchem meira will be given as if it was written and given already, even though it never got there or was never documented. On the other hand, by the bill of divorce and the document of emancipation, they do not go into effect until they reach the individual or until it's given to the shliach, depending if you're learning like Rashi or Tosafot. Where it says, Kitani milta delete bishtarot. Only wrote things that are not true by shtarot. Milta de ita bishtarot loktani. On the other hand, things that are true by shtarot, they didn't write down. The reason over here that it works by the monetary gift and not by these other items is because it's a matnat shchemera. It's because the Tachanat Chachamim that allows them to orally accept his last will and testament and then make it effective even though Kinyanim were never carried out. Other than if you documented it and he did it through a Shtar Kinyan, you'd have the same problem. If he wrote a document of gifting and says, Snoo, and you should give this to him and he never gives it over, it'll have the same din as a bill of divorce or a document of emancipation. It would not be effective. Because the only reason it's effective here is because they matnat Shchiv Meirah. Tshalach Rabbi Mishmei de Rebo, Rabbi Yodim. Tshalach Rabbi Lazar the Gola. Rabbi Lazar was in Eretz Yisrael. The Talmud Chaber of Rabbi Yochanan in Eretz Yisrael. Sends to the Gola, Mishum Rabbeinu. A name of Rabbeinu. I don't know who he's quoting here in Rabbeinu. It could be that he's speaking about Rabbi Yochanan as Rebbe. Or he could be speaking about someone before that. Shchiv Meira Shamar Kitvu Utnu Manel de Ploni. If he says, write down and give this gift to someone who made, Ein kodvim v'notim. Then we don't write it and give it. Shemar lo gamar laknoto alo b'shtar. From there it sounds like that he intended for the whole gift to go through a documentation process. Vein shtar l'achar mita. And there's no documentation, there's no gifting through a contract after the death of the individual. So you see here that a regular contract has the same din as the get shechrur and the gitei nashim. And that the only reason that there's an exception to the rule is when he does it orally and he effectuates the takanat chachamim shchem meira. So here, that's not something that's unique to gitei nashim and shechurei abadim. And for that reason, it was not enumerated amongst the items above. Vayika lishma. So what about lishma? The gitei nashim require lishma because it says b'kat of law. And then because of the gzeir shava between the two of them, we also need lishma by the Shechrur Abadim, which is, again, the Shechrur Abadim has less issue of Lishma. It really just has to be for the individual who's being freed. Bishlam the Rabbo, Haino Molich Umevi. For Rabbo, that is Molich Umevi, because before we said that the equation between them is that they have to say B'fanai Nechtam, B'fanai Nechtam, both for Gidei Nashim and Shechrurei Abadim. Well, according to Rabbo, the reason for saying B'fanai Nechtam, B'fanai Nechtam is because of the Lishma aspect. So it's captured already in that. Elo L'Rova Kasha. For Rabba, it's a problem because he malichu mevivrim is about edim mitzuyim. It has nothing to do with lishma. So then, why isn't lishma enumerated here? Vitu ben the Rabba, ben the Rabba, and beyond that, whether you hold like Rabba or Rabba, there's another issue that has a similar din between them. It's aika mechubar that if the document is attached to the ground and then you only sever it after it's already written or after it's signed, then the document is no good. We know that from Gitei Nashim because it says v'katav v'natan. You write it and give it. The only thing standing between the writing is the giving. If there's something else in between, like you have to sever it or you have to do any other action, it's not a kosher get. And again, with the Gzeir Shova, we say the same thing by Shechrei Abadim. So Gemara has to come up with a different way to explain why this list has these specific items on it. It does not have the items that we're listing here. Kiktani psula derabonon. Doraita loktani. The answer is that we only spoke about inyanim that are problematic mi derabanan, not issues that are Deoraita. And the reason being that by Dinim Deoraita, it's obvious that you're going to equate between Gitei Nashim and Shechrei Avadim because there's a Gzeir Shova. The question really arises in issues de Rabbanan. Rashi here goes through why that's the case. He says, Eid Kuti Pasumi de Rabbanan. The eight kuti is only possible with the Rabbanan, b'shar shterot, dachzginu stamaylu psula. Because we just give them a chazakah that they are pasur, not ne'eman. Technically, they should be good edim. But the chachamim had suspicions about them and about their motives, and therefore they said alastam that they are pasul, unless you know for sure that they are not psulim. And that would be the case by gitei nashim and shechrei abadim, where you have to sign together, and then you would have knowledge as to whether it's a kosher eid or not a kosher eid. Bifanai nechtav bifanai echtam, we've discussed all the way through now, that's all an institution derabanan to say bifanai nechtav bifanai echtam, so that's clearly an issue derabanan. But the Gemara is now going to question, so what about erkaot? Erkaot shel uvdei kuchavim, that's a psula d'oraito. That's a psula d'oraito. That's a problem midoraito. The reason the get is no good, the reason that the shechur abadim is no good is because the signatories are labnei kritut. They are not shayach to the world of gitei nashim. And so because of that, they don't have a right to sign on a get nashim to make it good. And that's a psul d'oraita. Barakot shol d'chavim d'psul d'oraita. Biktani. And you wrote it down. Gemara says, no, be'ede misira. The case there that the chachamim are listing or enumerating in the braita as to when it's pasul is in a case where, Rabbi Elazar d'amar, ede misira karti. It follows Rabbi Elazar's opinion that we're talking about ede misira karti. And if ede misira karti, then there were Jews who witnessed the giving of the document of divorce. And therefore, that's what made it into a document of divorce. The non-Jews that sign on it, they're not really problematic because they're simply acting as witnesses of evidence, not witnesses of the kiyum get or the effectiveness of the get. And as Rashi says over here, the problem is because dilma'ati l'mismach alayu b'lo ede misira. If we allow this to go through in a case where there are ede misira, what's going to end up happening in the end is that we're going to let it go through even when there are no ede misira. And if there are no ede misira, then the ede chatimi ar karte, here it sounds like Rashi holds like the riff, that even according to Rabbi Elazar, Eidi Chatima are good enough, and that Eidi Misira is just a dispensation. You can use Eidi Misira if you don't have Eidi Chatima. But Eidi Chatima are still good for Rabbi Elazar. That's what it sounds like from Rashi. According to Tosafot, who says that Eidi Chatima don't work for Rabbi Elazar at all, what you have to say here is that we are worried that if we allow them to sign on it, we'll also make them Eidi Misira, and they can't be the Eidi Misira. So therefore, it is not Pasul Midoraita over here, because you have Eidi Misira that make it good Doraita. It's just that the fact that non-Jews are signed on it, that is a psul dirabanan. Now, as Tosfos points out, even though right after that in the Mishnah, it says, uki Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Meir clearly doesn't hold like Rabbi Elazar. And Rabbi Meir says there are four things in the Mishnah. Well, one of those four things is the case of Erka Ochel Ovde Kochavim. But that means that it's Rabbi Meir who doesn't hold like Rabbi Elazar. How does he get to the four? So Tosfos says it doesn't literally mean Rabbi Meir says, or that Rabbi Elazar says, but it's basically saying that if you have a Tana that subscribes to Rabbi Elazar with regards to Eide Misira, and you have a Tana who subscribes to Rabbi Meir with regards to Kitei Nashim and Shechri Abadim, that they're both Chovot, then you would come out with four. But not literally to say that these are the positions of Rabbi Meir in all of these cases, or Rabbi Elazar in all of these cases. Just saying, if you take up their opinions in these situations, you'll either come up with three or four issues that are similar between Kitei Nashim and Shechri Abadim. It says, Rabbi Tani Seifa, doesn't the latter half of that say, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Af Elu Ksherim, that even these are considered to be Kasher. From Rabbi Zera, Yarad Rabbi Shimon L'shitato Shor Rabbi Elazar. The reason that Rabbi Shimon says that these are Ksherim is because Eidei Misira Karte, and therefore the signing of the non-Jews on the document is not a problem. Because he holds like Rabbi Elazar, the Amar Eidei Misira Karte. Michal Tanakama Savar, Lo. If Rabbi Shimon is saying it's kasher because he holds like Rabbi Elazar, makes it sound like that the Tana Kama is not holding like Rabbi Elazar. Gemara says, Iku benayu shemot muvhakim. The difference between them is if these are clearly non-Jewish names. They're clearly non-Jewish names that are signed in the document, then there won't be any confusion. So according to Rashi, the chashash here in the erkaot, maybe you will rely on the signatories and give it in front of them, that maybe they'll become the Eidei Misira. And just like they have non-Jews signed on here, then you will also use them as the Eidei Misira. And so therefore, the Tana Kama says that the get is invalid when it's signed by non-Jews. Rabbi Shimon comes along to say that you're right, with the exception of the case where they're clearly non-Jewish names. Shein Yisrael Nikarim Boton Shemot, that Jews don't use those names. Lavainu Mizuyach Mitocho. Because that's not considered to be an inherently invalid document. The mother of Azar did call Alma Yade to over the Kochavim him. It's so clear that they are non-Jewish Edimir, and therefore it's clear that they just signed on the document, but they were not the Edim Misira. So Rabbi Shimon says, if the names on the document are clearly non-Jewish names, and it's obvious that they're non-Jewish names, then it's not considered to be what's called Mizuyaf Mitocho, which is that it is deemed a no good get because it's as if there's a false get here. But since here it's clear that the Edim are non-Jewish, since it's clear that they're Jewish, then we know that they were not the ones who created the divorce, and there were definitely Edim Misira over here, and that will not ruin the document. On the other hand, the Tanna Kamma says, if you have non-Jewish names on it, then it is Mizuyaf Mitocho, because they are invalid Edim, and now you have invalid Edim signed on the get. So even though Edim Misira Karte, when you have invalid Edim signed on the get, it's Mizuyaf Mitocho if they're not Jews signed on it, because they are not Kasher Leidot of Kitin. If they're signed on it, it invalidates it, even though you have Edim Misira, as we saw in Rabbi Elazar Shita before. According to other Rishonim, it's not that Mizuyaf Mitocho or not Mizuyaf Mitocho. There's a question if we're going to get mixed up. The simple difference is whether we're Choshesh or not Choshesh. Meaning that Rabbi Shimon says if the Shemot move Hakim, they're not going to worry about them getting mixed up with Jewish names. And therefore it'll be clear that this was signed by non-Jews and they were only the Chatimya, not the Misira. Because everybody knows that they were not the ones that evidenced it. There were 80 Misira besides them. On the other hand, if they're not clearly names, then we might get mixed up. People might assume that their signatures were good signatures because they were also the Edei Misira, and rely on them to give it in front of them. Therefore, the Shavu Shimon doesn't allow it. The Tanna Kamma says never do we allow it because of the possibility that it'll get mixed up. Mar says, wait a minute, v'achazora d'oraita. What about the ability to back out? Isn't that a din d'oraita? Meaning that we just said here with regards to Rabbi Meir, who says if you want to back out of both of them, you're allowed to back out. Isn't that a din d'oraita, that you're allowed to back out of them? So why is that included in the list now? We just said now that we're not talking about similarities d'oraita, we're talking about similarities d'rabbanan. Rabbi says, kitani milta d'leta b'kiddushin. The Mishnah enumerates items that are not similar to kiddushim. Milta d'ita b'kiddushim loktani. When it comes to items that are applicable by kiddushin, there we did not write it. So the reason that all these other items are not there is because they are also applicable by kiddushin. It's not a difference between derabbanan and d'oraita, but rather a question of whether this has application by kiddushin or not. If it has application by kiddushin as well, it was not included in the list. So mechubar, which is a psul by kiddushin, therefore it's not included in the list of items that are similar between gitei nashim and shechrei abadim. Same thing with lishma. Lishma, which is necessary by Gitei Nashim and Shechrei Abadim. By Kiddushin, it's also necessary, otherwise you can't get married. If you're not doing something directly for the particular woman, like writing a shtar in order to have Kiddushin for that particular woman, you can't just pick up a shtar, because any shtar will not work to grant Kiddushin. The shtar has to be written specifically to generate Kiddushin with that woman. So Lishma is applicable for Kiddushin, Gitei Nashim, and Shechrei Abadim, and therefore it's not included in this list. Only items that are unique to Gitei Nashim and Shechrei Abadim and don't apply by Kiddushin are included in the list. The other items in the list, and now supposedly Chazara, are unique and don't have application by Kiddushin, because Fanai Nechtam and Fanai Nechtam, that's only relevant by Gitei Nashim and Shechrei Abadim. It has no relevance by Kiddushin, because the institution of Fanai Nechtam and Fanai Nechtam is to protect against the Arar of the Baal, the aspersions or questions of validity that the Baal might bring up about the get. But Kiddushin, that's not an institution that we need. We don't need to protect the woman who's getting married. We need to protect the woman who has a divorce and is acting on that divorce, or an Eved that's freed and is acting on that. We need to protect them. We don't have to protect a woman who, if the husband comes and says, oh, maybe I didn't give her Kiddushin, I did give her Kiddushin. That's not an issue where the Chachamim instituted b'fanai nechtam b'fanai nechtam. Because b'fanai nechtav b'fanai nechtam is to protect against agunot and against arar of the Baal, neither of which are relevant by kiddushin. And also, eid kuti is not kasher b'kiddushin. Because the reason that they were machshir in eid kuti by gitin is because the signatories to the document of the get and the shechrei abadim always have to be there together. They have to be together there to sign. That's true there, but it's not true by other contracts. It's also not true by Kiddushin. And so therefore, Kiddushin does not have the same din by an Eid Kuti. And with regards to Erkaot, we apply by Gitei Nashim and Shechru Avadim that it is Pasul, because they may use the Eidei Kiyum as Eidei Misira, and that would be problematic. By Kiddushin, since D'oraita, the Eidei Misira were effective, and she is married, then just because you have a document that's signed by the non-Jews, that can't invalidate the marriage. Then you're taking someone's an Eshadish and saying that she's not an Eshadish. That makes it actually a Kula instead of a Chumrah. And therefore, the Rabbanan only said it's invalid by Gitei Nashim and Shechrei Avadim. But they did not say it was invalid by other Shtarot, as we discussed already, but they also didn't say it was invalid by Kiddushin. Because then it actually turns out to be a Kula instead of a Chumrah. She's really married and you're saying she's not married. So none of those cases are applicable by Kiddushin, and therefore Mechubar and Lishma are not included in the list because they are applicable by Kiddushin. And then the Gemara says, wait a minute. Ba'chazara gufa ita b'kiddushin. Wait a minute, you can also back out of Kiddushin. If you send a shliach to do Kiddushin on your behalf, you can also back out of that. So the same way Rabbi Meir says, if you send a get shechrur, or you send a get pturin, a bill of divorce, a document of emancipation, or if you send Kiddushin through a shliach, according to Rami, you can back out of all of those. Then you can take back the shliach. You just told me that if it applies by Kiddushin, you didn't write it in this list. Well, here's something that applies by Kiddushin, and you still wrote it in the list. Mar says, Bishlichut bal korcha debigerushim ita bikiddushim leta. There's a difference between Gerushin and Kiddushin. The meaning of bal korcha is that one can divorce his wife without her acquiescence, and one can free a slave without the slave's acquiescence. It is the makneh, it's the one who's giving over the bill of divorce or document emancipation who has to make that decision to allow it to go through. But the receiving party does not have to be a party to it. On the other hand, by kiddushin, the receiving party is important. The woman has to accept the kiddushin, otherwise there is no kiddushin over here. Rashi says over here, "Klomar zumya degitin lo mishkachala." You can't find a chazara case that is identical. Because when you send the get to an isha, or you set a shechrur avadim to the eved, when you send those documents, you can send them against their will, and you can still pull it back. There's no similar scenario by kiddushin, because you can't send kiddushin baal korcha. Since you can't send it baal korcha, so then when you pull it back, it's not the identical case or scenario that you have by gitin and shechrur avadim. You could explain Rashi as saying that that is a siman, that the nature of the shlichut is different between Gitin and Shechrei Avadim and Kiddushin. Yes, it's simply a difference in the ability to send something Baal Korcham or not something Baal Korcham. And superficially, it looks like they're just different cases. But what Rashi might be indicating is the fact that you can't replicate the case also shows you something qualitatively about the shlichut. That the nature of shlichut by Gitin and Shechrei Avadim is different than the nature of Shlichut by Kiddushim. And in that way, he'll be very similar to what the Tosafot says in the name of the Rabbeinu Hananel. That's what Rashi says is the comparison between them. Tosafot says, what does that mean? Just because there's no such concept of Baal Korcha, why should that have any impact on your ability to pull it back? And so what Tosafot says is that by Gitei Nashim and Shechrei Avadim, you would have a Hava Mina that you could not retract or renege on the sending of the document. Since you can send it to them Baal Korcham, you can send it to them without their acquiescence, once you put it into motion, we would have thought maybe you can't pull it back. You can't do Chazara. By Kiddushin, it's obvious that you can pull it back because the Kiddushin don't go effective until she accepts it. So it's obvious that you can back out of it. So in that case, they're not comparable because you would have a different view of the sending by the Get Isha and the Shechrur Eved versus that of Kiddushin. Since by Kiddushin can't be done by Korcha, of course you can pull it back. Here, by Gitei Nashim and Shechrei Avadim, you would have a Hava Mina, you couldn't back out of it. And so the fact that Rav Meir says you can back out of it, that's the Chiddush. But that's a Chiddush that's only applicable to those two cases. That Chiddush is not relevant by Kiddushin, and that's why it's in the list, because it's different than Kiddushin in that way. That's how Tosafot explains that difference. All right, we're going to stop over here by the Mishnah on the top of Yud Amud Aleph.